Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast.
Oh, hold on, I forgot what I was doing.
Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast.
A classic turn one play. I'm Amy Orr.
And I'm Matthew Orr Bridges. So, let's talk a little bit about ink identities, or as I have known it for most of my life, the color pie. That's what Magic calls it, but it's the same thing.
I like the color pie. I think that, yeah. Like the color pie.
It sounds tasty, but yeah, so Lorcana calls it ink identity. It's the same thing if you're coming from Magic or if you've ever heard anything about Magic. So basically what the ink identity is, it's the idea of what each color is good at doing, what each color's ability is, and what it kind of always refers back to over the course of deck building, which is, I would say, the main consideration when you're talking about ink identities. And in the wake of the Hyrum and Fortisphere ban, there has been some more conversation about like what each color is supposed to be doing, right?
Yeah, which I have already expressed annoys me, but in the fact that they act like these are the only things that they do, you know? I feel like every color has some of the other identities in them. There's crossover. It's just not their main purpose. Their big, I can count on this.
Yeah. Well, and those are typically divided into primary abilities, secondary abilities, tertiary abilities. So a better way to think about it, as opposed to like, what can Amber do? Is you can kind of reverse it and say, what color gets healing? And you can go through all of the abilities and kind of assign them priority. But the primary color for a specific ability is always going to be like better at it
than
a color that has it secondarily. You know, going off of that, the abilities that each color has will determine how it's played, right? So any Sapphire deck, Sapphire is primary to ramping, and so any Sapphire deck is naturally going to lend itself to a longer game because you want to be able to capitalize on the ink advantage that you have over your opponent. Whereas Amber cards have an affinity for singing, so you may have a different game plan, you know, that is Amber's way of pushing an ink advantage, is having singers that can sing higher cost songs than the character's cost that you just played, right? In Emerald has a primary identity of returning characters to hand. A lot of times you're going to use that on your opponent's characters. And so Emerald is the primary tempo color where you are kind of erasing your opponent's last turn if you bounce their character with like a Kit Cloud Kicker. And so Emerald has a very tempo-y, I'm going to just play very efficiently, I'm going to disrupt you just enough, and I'm going to win that way by kind of stumbling you.
Interesting. So do you believe that is more their identity than discard?
No. A color can have multiple primary identities.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily that a color has a primary ability so much as an ability has a primary color that it's in.
Got it. Okay.
So Emerald has primarily discard and bounce, and ramp is primarily Sapphire, right? But ramping also exists in Emerald. There is I believe, a single card. I believe it's Hey Hey. That card exists in Emerald as like a catch-up because it has a condition and like you don't always get it. So I don't know how they classify ramping and emerald, but it does kind of fit into their whole like tempo strategy, where if your opponent has more ink than you do, then you get to ramp a little bit to catch up. I would consider that like tertiary to emerald, something that emerald technically gets, but it does not do it efficiently as sapphire, and it does not do it often, and it doesn't do it unrestricted. Kind of like card draw in all of the colors. Amethyst just gets card draw. You pay a certain amount of ink, you get to draw a certain amount of cards. All of the other colors have to do something in addition, or their card draw is more restricted in order to actually get that. So every color has a bunch of primary abilities, a bunch of secondary abilities, and then sometimes tertiary abilities, and all of those abilities overlap with the other colors. So Ruby primarily has, I would say, the most reckless characters. You have big characters that are reckless and can kind of tank damage, you know?
Sure, and rush.
And rush, right? Well, and that's what's interesting about the combinations is because, you know, I just looked up every card that has reckless on it. And there are 26 cards with reckless. 17 of them are in Ruby. 9 of them are in Emerald, except they give your opponent's character reckless. What's funny is that there is one Sapphire card that gives your characters with reckless the ability to tap and gain one lore.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
So what that's doing is that that's signaling you, hey, this Sapphire card would go really good in a Sapphire Ruby deck where Ruby's identity is having reckless characters. Reckless is a downside, so here is a way to mitigate that downside if you are playing these two specific colors. I find it really interesting the interplay of two different colors' primary identities, right? We saw this a lot when it came to the dual color cards, where all of a sudden two colors' primary identities could be put onto one card that would not normally have it. Like, I'm looking at a Ruby Steel character that has Reckless and also Resist. And so that is normally not something that you would find in a single card,
sure,
but it combines both colors' identities.
Yeah.
So when you are deck building, you should be looking at, you probably do this, everybody probably does this kind of naturally and maybe subconsciously, where they're looking at all the cards that they have and they're trying to figure out what best fits their play style, in addition to what is the most powerful deck that I can build within these two colors. So Ruby Amethyst, a very classic deck that has been very good historically, combines Ruby's ability to remove characters very efficiently with Amethyst's core identity of being able to draw cards and being able to,
I'd say being able to bounce them, right? Because then you can replay those.
That's not Amethyst's identity. That is Merlin and Mim.
Which has been a classic element of the deck since, what, set two?
Two, yeah. But that, see, we talked about this before also. Amethyst does not have a primary identity of being able to bounce their own creature or their own characters. They have the primary ability. Amethyst's primary abilities are being able to draw cards without restrictions and move damage counters and that's it. That is Amethyst's primary. I mean, what does Ravensburger say about Amethyst? Amethyst are sorcerers, sages, animated objects, and other glimmers who use special powers to achieve their aims.
They should probably ban all the mims, huh?
So, here... Don't go there. So, here's my thing, is I was gonna say... Yes, you're right. I was gonna say that Amethyst is very good at, like, bouncing, except bouncing is a Mim Merlin thing. And then I was gonna say that Amethyst is very good at freezing characters, like exerting them, making them unable to ready at your turn, except that is an Elsa thing. So reading this and seeing Amethyst glimmers are wondrous, for this is the otherworldly ink of sorcerers, sages, animated objects, and other glimmers. So then Amethyst also has brooms, and brooms do a bunch of stuff. Is Amethyst kind of like the catch-all, where Amethyst, it's like...
sounds like it's character-based rather than
yeah,
action-based.
It's like character abilities. It's like abilities that fit the character fit within Amethyst's identity. And I was going to say that maybe moving damage counters isn't a part of their ability. And maybe that's just Belle. But Amethyst coil moves damage.
Elephant.
Mim Elephant moves damage. And there's some actions. Yeah, so moving damage counters is an ability of Amethyst's. But I am struggling to find a... Outside of card draw and outside of moving damage counters, I'm struggling to find what Amethyst's abilities are as kind of a rule. And it seems like it may be that Amethyst is character-based and the abilities are based on the abilities of the characters that Amethyst gets, which is very much not an easy thing to nail down concisely.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Amethyst gets abilities that gain lore outside of questing. Let me fact check this real quick. Gain lore. Well, that doesn't help.
Okay, here's a random post on Reddit about Amethyst's identity. Okay, so they say card advantage and exert. Card advantage, that's pretty clear. I don't think we need to. While Amethyst lacks any direct interaction with characters outside of challenging them, it does enable favorable challenges by exerting chosen characters with cards like Elsa, Spirit of Winter. It's difficult to combine too many strengths when designing a color whose identity will be largely defined by card advantage, especially when deck building allows any two colors to work together. That does make sense. Then the response, the responses to that were, I would add in Challenger, though silver, Steel has, they said silver, not me, it wasn't me, has two more Challengers and deck manipulation to Amethyst's identity. Okay, villains, this is interesting, they have almost double every other character's number of villains. Now this was from a year ago, so who knows if that's true.
Right.
If you're wanting villains, there's a decent chance you'll be dipping into Amethyst. So even that really comes back to the same thing we were saying about it being about the characters, which is very interesting to think about. But
Not something I had ever considered, to be honest.
No, but it seems to be true, though, wouldn't you say? I mean... Mm-hmm.
Well, and I was looking it up, and Amber has the fewest villains, by far. They only have 13, right? Amethyst has 57, Emerald has 45, Ruby has 50, Sapphire has 35, and Steel has 35. So
definitely not the twice as many that it was
anymore
a year ago. But right. Still the most.
Still the most.
By a good percentage, but yeah.
Well, and so what I could see is Amethyst is primarily card draw, and then it seems like if they're not primary in lore gain outside of questing, with things like Sorcerer's Spellbook, Gathering Knowledge and Wisdom, This Is My Family, if they're not primary, they're definitely secondary in that. And I think actually what it would be is that they are primary in unconditional lore gain outside of questing. Other colors do have lore gain outside of questing, but you have things like Amber, which is, you know, you have Sleepy's Flute, or you have Alanadale, which both relies on songs, or you have Spaghetti Dinner, which relies on having characters on board, which is, you know, Amber's identity is about having a bunch of characters on board. It is really interesting that Amethyst is like the villain color. And I think it's also interesting that Amethyst's abilities come from the characters that are being played. So you have a whole genre of ability for Elsa, which is exerting characters, maybe freezing them. You have bells that move damage. You have Dr. Facilier, who returns your banished characters to your hand. And then you have the Mim and Merlins, which care about being bounced and replayed. Amethyst is an interesting one. And it seems like, you know, if you're going to do like a thought exercise, or maybe your local store does a weird tournament where it's only mono colored decks, Amethyst would be a really interesting one. I think it's one of the closest ones to being viable because it has such a wide identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the drawback to having such a wide identity is it focus. Lacks focus. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
Good job. And so, you know, like, Amethyst is an amazing secondary color to combine with. I mean, we've seen all of the different combinations of Amethyst decks, you know, and they have all placed pretty highly, except for maybe Sapphire Amethyst, which makes sense when you look at the strengths that Sapphire and Amethyst both have, and then the combination of their weaknesses, because neither Sapphire or Amethyst have any sort of efficient removal, which would be more in Ruby or Steel, or even to a certain extent, Emerald. So when you start combining these colors together, you get compounding effects in both their strengths and their weaknesses. And I think that you will find, if you haven't consciously considered this before, you will find that that is why certain combinations tend to rise to the top of the tournaments while other combinations struggle. So, for example, Ruby Steel has not historically done very well at bigger events. I think we've had like one or two Ruby Steel decks, you know, break into the top cut at certain tournaments, but Ruby Steel has never been the dominating force that something like Ruby Amethyst is. And that's because Ruby Steel's strengths rely on it being able to efficiently challenge characters, efficiently remove characters with either damage-based removal or Ruby's almost unconditional removal at times, right? But Ruby Steel, as a pairing, struggles to draw cards because drawing cards is not either of their primary abilities. And I think, you know, you could go through all of the uncommon color pairings. So I don't know that we've seen a very good Amber Sapphire deck. And I think that that's probably a combination of both issues. Amber and Sapphire, one, don't draw cards very well, and two, don't remove characters very well. So it kind of got the double whammy there.
Well, and I guess, all right, so I'm gonna do a search before I make a comment, just a second. Specific to the Amber Sapphire pair up, you know, if Amber is heavy on singing, well, for one thing, that's very interesting. You know, Amber is wanting to sing. Sapphire is wanting to ramp.
Right.
So it's almost like there's just too much to do there, you know, like yeah. they don't feel like they go well together because like the way that they're getting a lot done in a turn are like opposed to each other. Now, alternately, you could say, no, I'm going to ramp and I'm going to sing, so I'm going to get a ton done because I'm going to sing some of my stuff and then I'm going to use a whole bunch of this ink that I have. But I think then you're getting into different problems. The other thing I was going to say was, you know, I'm not sure how much the songs that Sapphire brings to the table are what Amber needs.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are to ramp.
Well, and that's why you see Amber singers. Singers are exclusive to Amber, which is interesting. It's not even primarily Amber.
Yeah, I was surprised you said that. And then I had to check because I was like, is there anything else that is exclusive like that?
It's one of the few abilities. I think that there's one more. It definitely is exclusive to Amber, which is very interesting. But Amber doesn't have very good songs to sing. And so that's one of the things where it's like, yeah, Amber is the enabling color for whatever color you pair with it that you want their songs from. And so that's why you have seen for a very long time now, Amber paired with Steel, so that you can get a very efficient sings of Let the Storm Rage On or Strength of a Raging Fire or And Then Along Came Zeus, right? I think you're right in the Amber Sapphire pairing where one, Amber's singers is kind of their way of ramping so that they can play high costed songs early. But Sapphire just does that by ramping. And two, how are you drawing cards in those two colors?
Popsicle.
That's it.
That's it.
In the aftermath of the Hyrum banning, Sapphire doesn't draw cards. That is not Sapphire's identity. Sapphire's identity is to ramp, and you have to mitigate the card disadvantage that comes from ramping by drawing cards in a different way with a different color.
Right.
But, you know, if you go down that path, you're like, okay, well, Sapphire ramps. Well, what draws cards? Amethyst. Amethyst draws cards. Okay, great. I've solved my card advantage issue, but by combining these two colors, I have now created a removal issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's actually a big deal. I don't think that that's a problem with the game. I think that that is part of the game is maybe we get into a situation where there is not a very big premium on removing characters. Maybe we get into a situation where, like, we don't need to remove a bunch of characters quickly. We need to remove one character every once in a while over the course of the game. And in that meta, maybe Sapphire Amethyst does really well because they do have access to things like Let It Go. They have access to things like Hades, and they're very good at removing a singular character, but they get put up against like an aggro deck and they're going to struggle. So I don't know that this is a problem. I think it's just part of the natural evolution, the ebb and flow of the game, that some of these color pairings are not going to be very competitive. Some of them are going to be overly competitive. And it really just takes the context to determine which one is which.
Yeah, I know that at one point, you know, wanting to try something different, I was looking at Amber Ruby, wanting it to be like Steel Song, but with Ruby instead. But the problem with that was the pretty extreme lack of of good songs in Ruby. There's a couple that are used a lot, but it doesn't. The Ruby's main source of removal is not songs.
It's not songs, and it's sometimes actions, but not action songs. So right. We have Brawl. Right. But you won't be able to sing a Brawl with a turn one Cinderella. So, and that's probably for the best. But then you get, you know, Ruby's identity is we are character based. Mm-hmm. And our characters either have Reckless so that they can challenge in an overstated way, or they have characters like Medusa or Lady Tremaine that get rid of a character when they're played.
It's interesting. It's what you're saying. There's the drawbacks of the combinations, you know, with Amber having all of the singers. You really want to pair it with something that has songs, unless you're not going the singer route.
And you don't have to go the singer route, right? You could pair. I mean, Amber Ruby is a deck that exists.
Yes, but not with singing. That had been my intent.
Exactly. So difficult to have the same Amber Steel Song gameplay with a different color. And I do wonder, you know, these drawbacks that each color combination has, I don't know that they're necessarily issues that need to be corrected, but there does seem to be an interesting void that some colors have. Like we were just talking about, like Ruby Amber is not going to be a singing deck because Ruby and Amber lack the songs that would be relevant to play. Maybe that is something that will be corrected with future sets where they will come out with a Ruby removal song and then a new deck archetype will be unlocked from that.
Yeah, I don't really, you said something that will be corrected and I don't know that it's something that's wrong. You know, I think it actually makes a lot of sense that I can't have the same game plan with two different combinations, you know, like obviously I was trying to, that sounded good to me, but it doesn't seem wrong to me that I can't, like,
well, that's what I mean is the drawbacks are not necessarily problems.
Yeah.
But they're limitations. With newer sets. Yeah. They're limitations. And limitations are what make it interesting.
Exactly.
We may see when new decks come out or when new sets come out, we may see some of these limitations and drawbacks shift and maybe gaps get filled in somewhere, right? I would be very hopeful for a future where any of these combinations make sense to play. What I am nervous about and what I hope doesn't happen is kind of a homogenization of all of these archetypes where it doesn't really matter what you play. It's all going to play very similarly. I think Ruby Steel is a very cool deck, especially with the introduction of the Dual Ink cards, but they are focused on challenging characters, right? Like, that is Ruby Steel's main focus, because that is both Ruby and Steel's primary identity. And I think it was very clever that with some Ruby Steel cards, they said, okay, what's the natural extension of the combination of two very aggressive style decks? And it's, well, we can challenge ready characters. And I think that that's very, very clever, because it doesn't get rid of the weakness of Ruby Steel, but it just extends their strength when working together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. 'Cause you're right. Like, if their issue right now is card draw, like, I don't think that the answer is introducing card draw. It's It is closing the gap through the methods it already uses, making it not as much of an issue that it can't get to the cards because it can address issues faster. I think that, yeah, that makes sense how it's been addressed so far, and hopefully it continues to be
right
growing in that direction.
I think it's going to be very interesting to keep an eye on. I don't know if Dual Inks are going to be an every set thing. But it would be very interesting to see, like, what is going to push the boundaries of the Dual Ink combinations while also keeping the limitations that those Dual Inks have. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing more of.
Well, I would venture to say that they won't be in every set, because you know what I noticed, that I'm sure other people noticed, that I'm clearly not the first person, that there were no locations in set 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they are clearly not saying, hey, we're going to introduce a new mechanic and or card type, and you're going to see it going forward. They're going to do what they do.
Yeah. You know, and maybe they'll alternate. They might alternate, you know, because I think that they have had a set number, maybe not a set number, but like a set proportion of characters make up 80%, whatever it is, of a color. And then you have 10% items, 10% songs, you know, whatever. So it'll be interesting to see if the Dual Ink cards alternate with locations. Maybe we'll see
dual ink locations
yes. in the next set, you know, or whatever. So that will be interesting. But kind of putting a cap on the ink identity conversation and the ink archetype conversation, I think what people need to take away from this is that restrictions are good. Restrictions make for interesting gameplay, and being aware of each color's strength and weakness, you will be able to craft a deck that takes advantage of the strengths and mitigates the weaknesses as much as possible. All right, well, that is our episode today. Thank you so much for listening to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast. I don't know if we're going to do that every time. You know what you're listening
to. No, yeah, I don't know that we need to.
I'm going to find our social accounts so that you can connect with us and chat with us. You know, leave a comment, smash that bell, press the like button, whatever, do those things. But we're on like all these different social media accounts, and I can never remember them, so I'm going to look those up. In the meantime, Amy, you told me something off camera that I wanted to give you an opportunity to expand on without me yapping in your ear and interrupting you. So you said that Sapphire just shouldn't be in the game entirely, that they should ban all Sapphire cards.
Mm.
Tell me more. Tell the listeners more about that opinion that you absolutely have.
Mm-hmm. It was so.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Basically, I think that if Flaversham doesn't exist, the color doesn't exist. And I go down with that Flaversham. Oof. I got nothing, man. That's...
All right. Thank you so much. You were a lot more vocal about that opinion off mic, but maybe you got a little mic shy. Anyway, you can find us on YouTube, on Twitter, on Blue Sky, and on TikTok at Inca Podcast. You can also find us at IncaPodcast.com. You can find us on Instagram at Inca Podcast Play a Podcast. We are on Spotify, Apple, whatever, all the places that you would normally get your podcast from, not just the place that you are currently listening.
Yeah, switch it up.
Yeah, you know, just hop over to Spotify and listen to us and, you know, leave a review on every platform ever. Anyway, thank you for listening.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Cool.
I'm going to hit this stop button.
Well, don't.
Not that stop.
Don't stop now. Don't stop yet. We need some outro banter.
Outro banter.
Yeah, you know how it kind of fades out as we're talking.
What if it was just us saying outro banter? Outro banter. Outro banter.
It just echoes.